I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungoyne, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, March 4th, episode 78. We're going to look at the United States today, somewhere we haven't looked at in a while, and where there's a new man at the helm in the form of Joe Biden. There have been over 2.5 million deaths worldwide during this pandemic. Almost a fifth of those occurred in the US. Similarly, 28 million, or over 20% of the 115 million total global cases, have been detected in the States. Our Washington correspondent Brian O'Donovan has more next. Brian, how are you? It's been a while.
It has been a while, and what a few weeks it's been. Busy few weeks here in Washington. Storming of capitals, impeachments of presidents, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's Donald things Trump's inauguration down. Day today, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, today is the day that the conspiracy theorists of QAnon believe that Donald Trump will rise to power. Today is the 4th of March. It used to be the date of presidential inaugurations many, many years ago, and the conspiracy theorists think that this is the day that Donald Trump will come to power. But what's worrying and what's serious about all of this is that they've, like, the Capitol building has been in lockdown since the storming 2 months ago, with fencing and soldiers, but they've added more fencing and more soldiers and more police today for fear that the conspiracy theorists might try to mount some sort of unrest or protest. In fact, they've even suspended the business of the House of Representatives for the day as well. They stayed late last night, did all their voting last night so that they could clear the place out for today. So it's worrying, you know? I mean, look, no one will ever forget the chaos and the frenzy that was that storming of the Capitol building, but the fact that there's still the belief out there that Donald Trump is the real winner, and the fact that there's still this threat of violence out there, is worrying 2 months on.
That cohort of people does feed into some of the vaccine hesitancy that we might get into later on, but of course other events in Washington about this time last year were causing you to do quite a bit of running around and filing copy and getting cameramen into the right place. That was all very relevant to Ireland.
That's right. And I'm sure we're all doing the this time last year moment right now, because, of course, it is 1 year to the day, perhaps, when a country had its first case or its first death or its first lockdown. And it's a very important time, I suppose, to look back on the year that was, because it all kicked off. So for me, this time last year, we were getting ready for the annual St. Patrick's Day events. The Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was coming over. He had shortened his trip dramatically because there was so much going on back in Ireland. But he was still going to come, and he was still going to meet with the President Donald Trump. And that was important that they had to do that. And I'll never forget the evening before, there was a gala dinner in Washington, D.C. Nancy Pelosi was there. Leo Varadkar was there. The Chief of Staff of the White House, Mick Mulvaney, were all there. And suddenly there was this commotion, and everybody starts looking at their phones and running off. And it was like something out of a movie. The Taoiseach was whisked away out one door by his people. Nancy Pelosi whisked out another door. Mick Mulvaney whisked out another door. And what had happened was that Donald Trump had just delivered an unexpected address to the nation from the Oval Office, announcing this big travel ban on all flights and all travel coming in from Europe into the US. And it was the start of those coronavirus travel bans. At the time, we thought Ireland was on it. Then it transpired we weren't. 3 days later, we were, because Donald Trump added Ireland and the UK. And it really was the start of the lockdowns. And then the following morning, Leo Varadkar famously descended the steps of Blair House, which is the mansion across the street from the White House where visiting dignitaries stay. And he walked down those steps and he announced the first of Ireland's restrictions, the first of Ireland's coronavirus lockdowns. It was the closures of schools, the closures of creches. He appealed for people to stay at home and work from home. And he also appealed for large gatherings to no longer take place in public.
And we also do another year-on event. I think it was just earlier this week you were looking at Andrew Cuomo's arc and where he is in his story, because he was somebody who was, after a horrific start to the pandemic in New York, regarded as somebody who'd given a masterclass in public communication and getting people on board. And a year on, that's all come a cropper.
and what a difference a year can make. He was riding high in the opinion polls. He was seen as this hero, this star of the Democratic Party. I remember when Joe Biden was floundering on the campaign trail and floundering in the polls, people were saying, oh, Jen, maybe we should take Joe Biden out and replace him with Andrew Cuomo. Isn't he great? So what would happen last year is that we typically, in the early days of the pandemic, there was two big press conferences every day. Andrew Cuomo's would take place in New York. New York, of course, was the epicenter of the coronavirus in the US. And he would go through the facts and the figures and what we're doing and we're fighting this. And he could be witty, he could be funny, he was inspiring, and everybody praised his efforts. So his press conference would typically be in the morning, Donald Trump's press conference would typically be in the evening. Donald Trump's press conferences, as we know, very controversial, very surprising, shocking statements, like suggesting the injecting of bleach and all these crazy sort of suggestions and looking for the fix, looking for the cure. And then, of course, Andrew Cuomo and Donald Trump themselves had this love-hate relationship where they would criticize each other at each other's press conferences, or sometimes praise each other at each other's press conferences. So that was the way last year panned out for Andrew Cuomo, seen as this guy who was taking on the toughest job in America, the most difficult outbreak of the pandemic, and that he was doing a very good job. But it all started to come a cropper for him in recent weeks. It started actually before the most recent scandal. There was a previous scandal prior to that. He was accused of downplaying and reducing the numbers of figures of deaths in nursing homes at the height of the pandemic. He had been criticized for putting too many patients into nursing homes in order to relieve hospitals, and then he was accused of downplaying the numbers and of reducing those numbers and of fudging the numbers to make himself
about
look
halving
better.
Them, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, he has come out and said that he will cooperate with any investigations that will be taking place into this. So he was already under fire for that. But then in recent weeks, allegations of sexual harassment started to be made against him. Three separate women alleging inappropriate contact, inappropriate comments, inappropriate touching. And he really, really looked under pressure, Colm. We all thought he was going to go. Yesterday, he tweeted that he was going to make an announcement at lunchtime yesterday, Eastern time, everybody watching it, thinking it was going to be a resignation announcement, but it wasn't. He started by giving the latest coronavirus figures in his state. And then he moved in to the allegations. And what he said was, he apologized. He said, I never meant to cause any upset. I never meant to cause any harm. It was never my intention. I've learned from this. He absolutely denied any allegations of inappropriate touching. He said he would cooperate with any investigations that were going to be carried out into these allegations. And he also said that he would not be resigning. He said, I was elected by the people of New York to do a job and I am going to do this job. But this does not mean the pressure has moved off him. No sooner did he have his press conference and some of his accusers came out and said he was lying. Senior Democrats are coming out saying they don't think this is a good idea, that maybe that is time for him to move on. So as I said at the start, what a difference a couple of months can make. This hero of the Democratic Party, this person who was really seeing on top of their brief just a few months ago, and right now he is in real, real political trouble.
Joe Biden is now trying to roll out his pandemic response. I suppose what's the fair assessment of Donald Trump's year on the job when it came to a proper pandemic response with regard to vaccine rollout and other restrictions and public health measures being taken in order to tackle the worst of it in the States?
So if you look back at the Donald Trump response, the big criticism would be the delays and the downplaying. And he told Bob Woodward in his book Rage, he said, I did downplay it and I downplayed the severity of it. I didn't want to cause a panic. Donald Trump, remember, obsessed with keeping the economy open. Not so obsessed with wearing masks, not so obsessed with social distancing. Very mixed messages from the top when it came to those things. And he embraced those states that didn't have mask mandates and that kept the businesses open. And he praised those governors and he criticized a lot of those governors that took a more severe approach to the pandemic. So it was a downplaying effort. It was an effort, of course, that will be remembered as he himself catching the virus. And you'll recall getting very, very sick and ending up in hospital and everybody thinking, well, this will change his tune now and he'll take it more seriously. He didn't. He came out triumphant and said, I feel like Superman. I got over this. You can too. Let's move on with our lives. Let's not let the treatment be worse than the virus itself, he would say. I mean, look, on the plus side, you have to give credit where credit is due. He implemented this Operation Warp Speed in a very Trumpian dramatic name that he gave it, which saw the efforts being put in and the money and the investment being put in to speed up vaccine production and vaccine rollout and to really get things up and running. What Joe Biden did when he came in then, I suppose, was he went down the route of a lot of new presidents. He started signing the executive orders because they're easier for presidents. They don't require any money. They don't require anything to be passed by Congress. It is just an executive order from the president's office where he can put pressure on departments or he can take money from one area and put it into another. It doesn't require any new funding to be drafted. And Joe Biden looked at things at what he could do. And that's the big thing here in the States, remember, Colm. Joe Biden cannot pass an order to say, I am ordering everybody in America to wear a mask. Individual governors can say, I'm ordering everybody in Mississippi or Texas or Ohio to wear a mask. What Joe Biden can do is he can control federal buildings and federal things and things that are owned by the federal government. So what he did early on was pass mask mandates for federal buildings and mask mandates for public transport. So anything he controls, he said, you have to wear a mask. And he changed some of the travel rules and increased quarantining. He initiated some more of the Defense Production Act for increased vaccine rollout. And what we saw from Joe Biden in recent days was further announcements on vaccines. He told us that Merck and Johnson & Johnson, normally rival pharmaceutical companies, would now be working together to ramp up the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And he gave a optimistic, interesting update on vaccine rollout. He said there should be enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May. Now, it's interesting that he said enough vaccine supply. That does not mean everybody in America will be vaccinated by the end of May. You then have the huge rollout, logistical challenges of physically getting it into the arms, getting the nurses, getting the staff, getting the trucks to deliver the vials into the pharmacies and into the hospitals.
That will be a challenge, though, won't it? I mean, to mention May as a deadline of having enough vaccine will inevitably be interpreted as we will have every adult vaccinated by the end of May. But of course, that deadline will be missed if it is only talking about supply, and he'll probably be beaten over the head with it by his political rivals.
Yeah, the deadlines is, you know, it's like every politician, and I don't often feel for politicians, but I do feel for them during this pandemic when they're pushed on things. When's everything going to return to normal? When is life going to be back to normal? When is everything going to be fixed? And of course, that is impossible to answer. And Joe Biden has always asked this at the end of his press conferences. The journalists will shout, when are we going to be back to normal? And it's interesting. I saw a sequence played on one of the TV news networks the other night, kind of from almost the moment of his election win in November. He was always saying, this time next year, this time next year, this time next year. But of course, time has moved on and he is still saying this time next year. So his latest thing is that, yes, by this time next year, life will have returned to normal. So can we hope for St. Patrick's Day, March 2022, that we will have the normal events here in Washington? Fingers crossed for the world in general that things will have returned to normal. But yeah, everybody's obsessed with deadlines and talking about when are we going to get the vaccines? When is this going to happen? He originally had said that he wanted 100 million vaccines administered in his first 100 days. That is looking like it's going to actually happen. Yeah, that is a target.
1.7 million doses are going out every day.
Yeah,
so he could hit that target.
It looks like he will, actually. I think they're up to about 70 or 80 million doses out already at a time when he has, whatever, a month left to reach that 100 days. So it looks like he's going to reach that target. But interestingly, he was also, of course, criticised for that target at the start, with a lot of journalists pointing out at press conference saying, look, it's a bit modest, maybe you could be a bit more advanced. But of course, look, no politician is going to set this target for to be too high, because then, of course, they will miss it and it won't be achieved. Then he'd originally spoken about getting every American vaccinated, or at least having enough vaccines for everybody by July. And then, as I say, in recent days, he brought that back to the end of May. But he was careful in the wording column, and he spoke about how enough supply for everybody. So we are going to have enough supply out there. Number one, I'm not saying we're going to have enough nurses to administer it. We're going to have enough places for it to go. And number two, I can't guarantee everybody will take it. And of course, that's the big problem as well. Will people want it?
And what is the barrier there, or how widespread is that barrier? I mean, they reckon that it's 70 to 80% of people need to take a vaccine, like in the case of measles, in order to achieve herd immunity. And some herd immunity will be, I suppose, added to by the fact that people have been infected already and may have developed some immunity as a result of that. But you need a pretty high cohort of people to take it. Has it been a problem heretofore? Is it too early in the vaccination program in the States to tell whether or not vaccine hesitancy is a problem?
It's too early to tell, and that is because we are still working through, no different to in Ireland, we're still working through our age groups and our frontline staff. We have not yet got to that general population of everybody who wants a vaccine can have a vaccine, come and get it. Then it'll become the clear where the problems are. And let's come back to something we discussed at the very top on a completely unrelated topic. Those conspiracy theorists who believe that today is the day that Donald Trump will be inaugurated. You are always going to have people out there that have huge vaccine hesitancy, and they believe some theory that they read online about this, that or the other. And it is going to lead to problems. And remember, the entire coronavirus here in the US has been extremely politically divisive. Mask wearing, closures, it's driven people down the middle. The hope would be that when it comes to vaccine, the vast majority, I suppose, would feel, look, this is safe, I'm happy to take it. But of course, you are always going to have that cohort who, for whatever reason, be it something they read on the internet, be it some other reasons that they have themselves, won't touch it with a barge pole and will stay away from it. And as you said, yeah, that's a problem. Because if you don't get that 70, 80% herd immunity, then it makes the whole thing very, very difficult to overcome.
And the other thing that will be seen is that once some of the population has been vaccinated, states who are looking to open up 100%, like Texas last night, as we record this on Thursday, may jump the gun on reopening, and that may cause its own problems with regard to infection levels.
Yeah, the Texas move this week, I think, took a lot of people by surprise, and Mississippi did something similar. And basically those states said, particularly in Texas, the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, who, you remember, has come off an appalling couple of weeks, as I'm sure you've been following in the news, Texas had this most unprecedented snowstorm. Texas never gets snow at all. It's a very, very hot state. Usually the problem there is heat waves, but it got this terrible winter storm over the last few weeks. The electrical grid couldn't handle it, and people were plunged into terrible blackouts. It was absolutely freezing, really, really dismal. It was almost as if off the back of that disaster that was Texas, the governor decided, right, I need a bit of good news here. And out of the blue this week announced, right, mask mandates gone. Businesses 100% open. He basically has reverted the state back to the pre-pandemic days. Huge concerns that he has jumped the gun here, that this is far, far too early. Remember the variants. Remember the fact that as soon as things start to unlock, Ireland knows it only too well, it's the same here in the US. We had it for Thanksgiving, we had it for Christmas. As soon as people travel, as soon as people left the guard down, the numbers go through the roof. So that is the big fear, that in Texas, you're going to have the numbers spiking because of what happened. As I say, similar announcements in Mississippi and other states are also easing their restrictions. Joe Biden came out last night and said that this was Neanderthal thinking in these states, that they should not be doing what they are doing. It is jumping the gun. It is far too soon, saying, look, we still have to wear the masks. We still have to socially distance. We still have to keep the businesses closed until everybody is vaccinated, until we are through this thing, which, as I said, he is now saying could be a year before life starts returning to normal.
Right. Although apparently, if only it were Neanderthal thinking. I heard Professor Luke O'Neill from Trinity College speaking on the radio earlier today on a different station to talk to Pat Kenny on News Talk, saying that actually a Neanderthal gene that we have retained as a result of crossbreeding between Homo sapiens and Neanderthals has actually had quite a beneficial role in our immunosystem. So there you go.
So Neanderthal thing. So Joe, it was a backhanded compliment then, surely, to the governor of Texas.
Yeah, maybe it is Neanderthal thinking, and they think their immune systems are sufficiently robust,
yes,
to withstand this. The handling of the coronavirus pandemic, Brian, it was one of Joe Biden's signature planks, that this was part of Joe Biden, the steady guy, Joe Biden, the guy who would show responsibility, Joe Biden, the guy who would look after the most vulnerable. Is it playing well for him, or is he just the president, eating bread is soon forgotten, and the guy in the job is just expected to get on with it without people cheering too much about it?
Joe Biden, as I mentioned earlier, was a big fan of the executive order, like all presidents when they take over, because they're easier. You sign them, you put them out there, you get a headline, I'm doing X, I'm doing Y, I'm implementing this, I'm implementing that. And that's nothing new. Donald Trump did the same, Barack Obama did the same. You undo the stuff of your predecessor and you can undo it pretty quickly. The tricky bit is getting the legislation passed. And this is the big challenge facing Joe Biden now. He has a $1.9 trillion economic relief bill for the coronavirus, an absolutely eye-watering amount of money that he wants to get through Congress. It has passed the House. No big surprise there. The Democrats have a strong control of the House of Representatives. The Democrats also control the Senate, but as we know, it's extremely tight. It's a 50-50 split, with the vice president having the deciding vote. He needs this win. He needs to get this through. The clock is ticking as well, Cullen. One of the most important features of this coronavirus relief bill is enhanced unemployment benefits. The existing unemployment benefits run out on March 14th. This will be very problematic and politically damaging for Joe Biden if people are plunged back into poverty and difficulty as a result of the pandemic and as a result of losing their jobs. The pressure is on him now to get this coronavirus relief bill through. Republicans are against it. They have vowed to fight it. They're going to lash in the amendments. There's going to be hours and hours and days of debates. The Democratic leadership are saying we have the votes. There's some doubt maybe not everybody's on the same page. Bernie Sanders, for example, very annoyed that there isn't an increase in the minimum wage in there. He's going to try to tack on some amendments for that. There's a Senator Joe Manchin in West Virginia. He is Democrat, but he's kind of almost Republican leaning. He's very conservative. There's a fear that he might not be involved. This is Joe Biden's big test. He needs a win here. And as you say, yes, he was elected as the man who was going to fix America, get them through the coronavirus. He sees this as the first big step to doing that. So he will definitely need this win, and he'll be hoping it'll get through Congress.
And Brian, this looks ahead to 2 years' time where there'll be midterm elections. If he was to base it on today's numbers, things are going okay. There has been a fall in daily case numbers, but the death toll, the hospitalizations, everything else is coming down. By the time the midterm elections roll around, there is a chance Joe Biden could set a record of recent times and actually do well in the midterms, as far as it's being a Democratic president anyway.
But you mentioned set a record, and that's the problem for presidents. Their party don't do well in midterms. It's like a by-election in Ireland, you know, it's the chance to punish the government. It's the chance to punish the president if you don't like him. Yeah, I mean, the figures are coming down. I was just looking at some stats there. The drop, I mean, the figures in America were absolutely horrendous. If you look back to January, it was 300,000 new cases a day. That's now fallen to 68,000 a day, but that fall is kind of stuck. It's sort of stuck at that level of 68,000 a day, which is still very high, 68,000 cases a day, but of course it is a drop. You mentioned the death figure improving, but still going up. We're past 500,000 deaths here. More than 500,000 people have lost their lives to this virus. Yes, look, none of us have crystal balls. Goodness knows what things are going to be like in 2 years' time. If Joe Biden has turned things around, if he has managed to address this problem, and remember the huge economic devastation that will be left in the wake in this country and every other country, once the deaths and the illness and the crisis element has been solved, there will be a huge economic crisis to solve. He will be judged on that. But remember who's in the background in all of this, Colm, is one Donald Trump. He has not gone away. He delivered this big speech at the Conservative Conference, CPAC, on Sunday. It was the first time we heard from him in a long time. Of course, his Twitter account has been taken away. He has been silenced, but he stood up on the stage. He talked about how his movement is stronger than ever and will go on and how he will fight. And he has spoken about we are going to win the House back for Republicans in those midterm elections. So he will be there beating the drum for his massive support base. So he will be one of the biggest challenges for Joe Biden, most definitely when it comes to the midterms and, of course, not least, the virus as well.
And you know when we'll have a better read on this, Brian? This time next year.
This time next year. To quote Joe Biden, this time next year.
All right. Thanks a million, Brian.
Good to talk to you, Colm. Thank you.
All the best. Cheers. Thanks a million. And that's it for another episode. If you want to get in touch with any feedback, you can contact me on colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie or on Twitter @colmomongain. We're back next week with more. Until then, stay safe, take care, and thanks for listening.